and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight we're going to discuss Dr. Andrea Rosenoff and her book on magnesium. How are you, Dr. Rosenoff?
I'm doing well, thanks, Eva.
Well, thanks for coming on. I have to tell my guests, I thought I was calling Norm Shealy tonight. I redid my calendar, and I wrote the names on the wrong places, so thank God I have a team player on the other end of this phone who rescued me.
Yes, and I'm glad that I'm here this afternoon and just finished a little bit of a snack.
Okay, so your book, The Magnesium Factor, is one of the best books that I've read on a very important topic on magnesium. People don't know enough about it. In fact, that's one of the things Norm and I talk about when he comes on my show is the importance of magnesium. So why don't you give everybody a little bit of background about you before we start, where
about
they can
me?
Find you. Yes, how.
Me?
What you do, how to get in touch with you, where they can find your book.
I see. Okay. Well, I'm Andrea Rosenoff, and I am a biological nutritionist, and I did my master's and PhD at University of California at Berkeley back in around 1976 to 1982, and I did those graduate degrees in nutrition, and I had done my undergraduate work in biology. And I got many jobs after that in library science very early on when the online science company named Dialogue Information Services, where I was the senior chemical specialist for that company. And my job was to go to the researchers in chemistry and show them how to search the databases, chemical abstracts and Kirk-Osmer and analytical abstracts, the Merck Index and so on. And they also, of course, had Medline at that time online. And so I learned how to search the literature, the peer-reviewed scientific literature, at somewhat of an early time before the Internet really started getting going. And I really enjoyed that. Unfortunately, I got sick, and I had chronic fatigue syndrome. So I went to a lesser structured job, but then in the end I really just had to stay home. And I really thought I had to give up the whole idea of studying nutrition. But one of the most wonderful things that had happened to me, when I finished my PhD in 1982, I had specialized in the nutritional minerals, iron and copper, and, that list of essential nutrients. And I was very surprised to learn when I was invited to give a talk at a conference in Illinois, they had asked me to speak about a paper that someone had worked on about magnesium. And I knew so little about it that I went and I did some library research in a Professor George Briggs' files, and I was shocked at what I had found. I mean, here I was, right out of one of the prime universities in the subject of nutrition, in the field of minerals, and what I found out in the research of magnesium, I had no idea was that it had, there's first of all epidemiological studies, where almost all around the world, areas that had low water magnesium and low soil magnesium, those areas had higher rates of death by acute heart attack than other areas of the same cultures, in fact, that would have higher magnesium. And this was so interesting to me. I went and started learning about magnesium really as a hobby from then on. And as I was working as a library scientist, I was able to follow the work along for many years. So this started around in 1985, mainly as just sort of an area of interest. And after I became ill and I couldn't work anymore, and we moved to Hawaii so that I could have a less stressful life, we got a computer. And by gosh, there was Medline for free. and I could search it. This was around 1996.
I remember.
1997. And I continued on working with my magnesium, and I was surprised to see that there had been even more evidence that a magnesium deficit could explain all the common risk factors for cardiovascular disease that we all thought was high saturated fat, cholesterol, and I found that it could explain hypertension, it could explain high cholesterol values, it could explain C-reactive protein, and all of them. And I decided that I really needed to write a book about this new paradigm of how nutritional magnesium and the deficit that is so common in the processed food diet, and in fact the diet of the entire Western world, that this was another way of looking at heart disease that was going to the root cause, rather than trying to just handle these side issues, which in fact we call risk factors.
Do you think that it makes a difference? And I'm going to let you say whatever you want, because this is actually my favorite thing that I like to talk about, is minerals. Do you think that it matters whether you take it orally or transdermally?
I have not seen peer-reviewed research, evidence-based research, that has actually measured transdermal magnesium. And so this common practice that is out there now, and I know about it, is the only thing we have with it is historical. Magnesium as a health benefit was first discovered in Epsom, England, because of Epsom salts.
Mm-hmm.
And his cows were taking it orally, but also he later on had baths, and people would go and be in these baths of high magnesium sulfate water and feel better. But I don't know of anybody who's actually measured it in the same way. I do believe orally for some people they get gastro distress, or they get loose stools or even diarrhea, especially if they are having more magnesium in a dose than their body can handle. So if a person needs magnesium and their GI tract is too sensitive for it, it's possible that a transdermally obtained supplement would work better for them, but I have not seen any studies of this, and I can't say for sure that it would be true.
How does it compare? I'd like to talk about hypercholesterolemia and hyperlipidemia for a minute, because everybody in the world, just about in America, is walking around with those things. So how do you explain? I asked one of my lawyers at work, I work at a law firm in the day, why do you have high blood pressure? Because I wanted to know if he knew the cause of his particular. He said, because I have high blood pressure, I have heart disease. So he said, but I take these statins and it cures it. So how do you explain to give someone the science for magnesium that doesn't understand the effect of minerals in your body?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It all really runs together in my mind, and I believe in the evidence-based research. And so stop me if I get too obtuse or something, okay? All right. Cholesterol. Cholesterol is a compound that is made naturally in the body. On its pathway to being cholesterol, it starts with a compound called HMG-CoA, and it is converted gradually, step by step, through enzymatic reactions to cholesterol. Cholesterol is a precursor to things like vitamin D, and also to the hormones, the steroid hormones like estrogen and testosterone, their building block is cholesterol. And so you can see that the body needs to be able to make cholesterol so that it can make these important compounds. On the way from HMG-CoA to cholesterol, for example, there's a side light that comes off in that pathway that goes to coenzyme Q10, another really important compound that the body makes. And so this pathway that the body, the cells, make cholesterol is a natural one. Now, there's an enzyme that is the rate-limiting enzyme for this reaction. It is called HMG-CoA reductase. And it is controlled, among other things, by the amount of magnesium in the cell. When the magnesium...
I have a question here. Is this some kind of enzyme that you can supplement? Does your body stop making it? What happens here? Can you supplement it somehow? Or does it need to be supplemented
somehow? No, it doesn't need to be supplemented.
Okay.
An enzyme is going to be made if you have a cell is alive. It's making from its DNA, making RNA, and the RNA then acts as a template to line up amino acids. The amino acids come together in a certain order, and that makes a protein which curls around in a certain way, becomes an enzyme. Some of these enzymes have to have cofactors, such as like magnesium or calcium or zinc or so on. Well, this particular enzyme, HMG-CoA reductase, which is the rate-limiting enzyme in the cholesterol synthesis pathway, is turned on and off by a phosphate reaction that is controlled by magnesium. And so when it is turned on, you make cholesterol. When you turn it off, you stop making cholesterol. And it turns out in a cell or a body that is actually deficient in magnesium that the HMG-CoA reductase gets turned on and it continually makes cholesterol more than the body would need if it had all of the essential minerals in the right amounts that it needs. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. So how do you know? I use transdermal magnesium, and actually I had high blood pressure, and I lowered it 70 points.
Good.
In 3 weeks using transdermal magnesium.
Were you taking oral magnesium before?
Yeah, and just nothing happened. And I was on the maximum dose of Marvasc, and it wasn't. It was over 200 on the top and over 150 on the bottom.
Wow.
And as soon as I started doing the transdermal, it just went down.
That's right.
So what I want to know now is, if I know that if I've used too much transdermal, I get pain in my back over my kidneys. So, but the average person is not going to pay that much. They're not going to understand what's going on, and they're not going to know that that's related. So how does somebody know if they have enough? Because my doctor said, oh, you're just getting old. I'm 49.
I see.
So how does the average person know that they need magnesium and not potassium, or if they get too much, or that the oral supplement they're taking is not working?
I see.
How do they know that, the average person?
Well, the average person, the best way to do it is to listen to your own body and to remember that how you feel, you're not going to feel really great if you don't have all your essential nutrients in the right amount and in the right pattern. And magnesium, there was a recent study by USDA, of what we eat in America, finding that 67% on the average of Americans are not getting their requirement of magnesium in their foods on a daily basis. This is as high as, I believe, 70% in teenage boys and even higher in the elderly above 70.
So
the foods that you're eating and that you have been raised on for a couple of generations now have been low in magnesium. Some people have low requirements for it, and so they will get enough from that, and they'll feel just fine and live healthy through their whole old age, given their genetic and environmental situation. But other people are not quite getting enough magnesium through their lives if they're on a main processed food diet, just because we've been taking, well, we can talk about that later. And so if you're not feeling good, there's a list of magnesium deficiency symptoms in the back of my book, and I think it's worthwhile to go in and take a look at that and make a list of, check all the ones, these I'm feeling, these I'm experiencing. make a self-diagnosis of yourself. Not that that's it, because these things can be caused by other things. But magnesium is so inexpensive and so safe to take that you could try it orally, and then, as in your case, you could try it transdermally if that doesn't work, and give yourself a real test to find out, is this something that is, in fact, showing up to make it better? I believe that's the best way to do it, because of this time, going into your doctor and saying, I want to know if I'm low in magnesium, and your doctor does a serum magnesium test or even a red blood cell magnesium test, the ranges for these have been brought into quite a bit of question by the magnesium researchers. And they feel that we have the low range way too low. That these standard, like I said before, magnesium is not well taught in the medical schools and graduate schools and undergraduate upper division courses. I myself did not get it, and it was my field. And so there's a feeling that these standard ranges for serum magnesium were in fact taken on people, some of whom had a subclinical magnesium deficit. And so the range we have is really much wider on the low scale, and we say it's normal when in fact it is not.
Right, right.
And there's more and more evidence for this all the time.
How long does it take before it will turn that gene off so it stops making cholesterol?
That's a difficult question. It really comes down to, I don't want to get too technical, but in the cell, have you ever heard of ATP?
Yes.
Okay, adenosine triphosphate, sort of like the batteries of life.
Yes.
ATP has three phosphates on it. It drops off a phosphate and it gives us energy. And then we put in energy from our food cycles and put that third phosphate back on so that we regenerate or recharge our batteries. Well, those reactions are keyed, again, by magnesium. Adenosine triphosphate is a magnesium-dependent molecule. And so when you have a certain percentage of magnesium ATP and magnesium ATP in your cell, and it gets down to a certain level in the ratio, then you start seeing an effect on the activity of this enzyme that I'm talking about, and the cholesterol can start to rise up. But there are many, many, many other things that can affect this enzyme, many other dietary things.
Like
a good way to find out is, and the other thing is, there's a difference between LDL and HDL cholesterol. HDL cholesterol is called the good cholesterol, and LDL is called the bad cholesterol. And magnesium, a high, good magnesium status will go along with a higher HDL cholesterol. In fact, when you start getting your HDL cholesterol down too low, then that's when you're more at risk for heart disease. And the reason being is that you're, in fact, lowering your magnesium status. And that is a marker, I believe, of your magnesium status.
You know, if you think that that's really what's wrong with all the people that's walking around with chronic heart disease.
A lot of them. I'm not saying all of them.
I understand that. You know, we can't pin you down. We're just getting ideas here. But I watched several people in my life die from this, and I see how it's profoundly changed my life, just taking magnesium. Also, it makes my heart feel better. It doesn't race and have palpitations, and it helps depression as well.
Yes, it does.
So can you talk about those two things, palpitation, arrhythmias, strokes, and depression?
I'll give it my shot, okay? All right.
I'm so sorry I got you confused tonight with Norma, because I really wanted to prepare for this interview.
Well, you know, this is very interesting, isn't it? And I feel the same way, but let's see how it comes out, okay?
You have to come back.
All right. I would love to. The heart. Okay, the heart is a muscle. And muscle molecules, myosin and stuff, each one of them has a magnesium atom in it. Magnesium is an integral part of the structure of muscle, even more so for heart muscle, which is a specialized kind of muscle. So if a body gets low in magnesium, well, the heart, the muscles are not going to be able to function completely normally or up to their genetic potential. And since the heart is a muscle, in fact, you start getting low magnesium, it starts to not be able to beat properly. It becomes more contractile, and you can get these arrhythmias that go on. It can be very frightening. What's important in this is the magnesium to calcium ratio. Magnesium and calcium are two essential elements that form a team in the cell. Calcium, very, very important. As when calcium gets high inside the cell, it kicks off reactions. If you're a nerve cell, it'll fire. If you're a muscle cell, you'll contract, and so on. So calcium coming in to the cell and starting up the reaction is an extremely important, vital part of life. But
so how do
for
you...
that cell to stop firing, or for that muscle cell to stop contracting, the magnesium has to come up in the cell to a certain level, which will then force the calcium back out of the cell, and so that the cell can stop reacting, stop acting.
Okay, I have a question here. When I interviewed Norm Shealy about this the other day, one thing he told me was that if you use transdermal magnesium, that you don't need to take supplemental calcium with it, because something about the way it being transdermal helped you absorb calcium naturally. So if you took supplements, it actually made you have too much. How do you know if you need calcium or not?
Oh, that's a very good question, too. Now, I would love to have Norm send me papers, what he knows. I stay in the evidence-based science. And so that's where but I'm not a clinician. And so it's not like I have patients coming in and I'm trying
mm-hmm.
different things. Do you know what I mean? A
mm-hmm.
clinician has a different, is Norm a clinician?
He's a neurosurgeon and a psychiatrist, I think. But now he does pretty much alternative medicine.
Okay, but he has patients coming in.
Yes.
So he is seeing people all the time and he's trying these different things.
Yes.
That is a very different perspective than what I come from. And so I would not negate what he's saying at all. Because for a long, long time, medicine was, in fact, case studies. We're now in a phase where we're into statistical studies. You have to take a bunch of people, and you have to say, okay, if we give them this, they're going to be different than people we don't give it to. Never does 100% of those people respond in that way. But statistically, we can say, okay, this is a safe and effective medicine. Well, no matter how many statistical tests you do, you can never still predict what one individual will do given that supplement, medicine, whatever. And so that's where the clinician comes in, and they are very knowledgeable. But often their knowledge does not get translated into the peer-reviewed science that I go over.
Another question I have is, well, actually two. The first one is, people that have problems retaining the magnesium, or any other mineral for that matter, what is it that's causing it not to be retained?
That's a very good question. And my co-author, Mildred Seelig, she was a physician, and she studied magnesium for over 40 years. She was a real great expert. And when I told her about my chronic fatigue syndrome, and I, in fact, had a couple of relapses when we were writing the book, she said to me, I think that you're a magnesium waster. And what she meant by that was that my kidney could not reabsorb the necessary magnesium before bringing it back into my body, and so it was released in the
mm-hmm.
urine. And that I think she's probably right, and I think this goes up or down, and that my response to this is from years and years and years of way too much stress, too low magnesium in my diet, and maybe living on fluoridated water, which seems to grab onto the magnesium and make it so that it is not as reactive as it would be if the fluoride was lower.
So what do you do? Just keep supplementing it all the time?
I do.
Is it going to hurt your kidneys?
I'm hoping not,
okay.
But if I don't do it, then I... you know, I'm in bed.
Yeah, I
can't think, and I'm anxious. You know, I'm irrationally anxious.
Yes, I understand. I had this conversation with a friend of mine last night. Her name is Dr. Susan Kolb, and she said, "You know, Eva, one thing she's a plastic surgeon, but she's also got an alternative medicine practice on the side, and she's real intuitive. And she says, I intuit that if you can't hold your minerals and your trace minerals, that you need, and I think she said iridium. Is that right? Do you know that word?
I don't. Iridium?
I think that's what she said. She said it's a kind of trace metal, and that she studies somewhere that if you can't hold on to all of your minerals, that you're short on that thing, that that's the thing that pulls all the minerals and holds them in.
That's very interesting.
Have you ever heard of that?
I have not heard of it, but it doesn't mean I can go into the literature and see what I can find. Many of these things, there's a couple of things. All the essential nutrients and the minerals included in them. There's 44 essential nutrients for the human being, vitamins and minerals and essential amino acids. And of course, you need to have calories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have some of the essential fatty acids. And if you get an imbalance in these or you get deficient in them, the body adapts, tries to adapt, and it can adapt up to a certain point given its genetics and given its environment. But if it has to adapt too far, then what we would call disease sets in.
And I'm sorry, Glenn.
Well, preventing that nutritionally is the best way to go. So, of course, you want to have a good array of minerals, but you don't want toxic minerals. There's the balance, you see, and there's a lot of knowledge that you have in order to get a good balance. It's a natural source. And because our processed food diet, we are taking, for example, let's take wheat. We mill the wheat, and the amount of minerals goes way, way down. As the amount of other micronutrients, vitamins do too. For a long time, we've put back into the flour thiamin, niacin, riboflavin, and iron, and more lately, folic acid, which has made a big difference in lowering the number of birth defects. But you see, those five things is not sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, zinc, copper, molybdenum, manganese, etc., etc., etc. So the processed food that is feeding all of us as our population, world population grows, and in many ways it's doing a very good job because longevity is getting, you know, if that's our goal, we're doing something right. But we haven't gotten to the point yet where we are putting back into our processed food all of the minerals, all of the vitamins in a good mix that we need. I think we're on our road to that, but we just haven't gotten to it, and it's not an easy thing to do.
Do you think the lack of these minerals and trace minerals have something to do with the belly fat and the syndrome X that everybody's getting?
I do. Personally, I do. But I don't, and I proposed this in Mildred's in my book. And I said that abdominal fat, I thought, is a response to a low magnesium and other mineral body in the state we're in, plus a tremendous amount of sugar, refined sugar, and high fructose corn syrup. All of our diets are very high in these things. And I believe it might be a way of the body adapting to try to take in and store in certain ways. It's an adaptation to that particular diet, or a year-long chronic diet.
I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay.
Now that I know you know about minerals, it's so much about minerals and trace minerals, if you take zinc every day, how do you know if you're supposed to take copper and how much, so that you don't get too much? How do you know which one of those you need and how much?
I do not know. My dream and my vision, Eva, is that we are going to have doctors who are trained in this in medical school, and that research in this is going to be a vital area of research rather than the small area of research it now is, and that we're going to be able to go to our doctor and there are going to be tests, and they're going to be able to say, aha, you need a little bit more of this or a little bit more of that, and here's how you do it, and they're going to be able to follow you along and maximize your health with micronutrients. That is one of my biggest goals, is to get us to that point. The knowledge is there. A lot of knowledge is there. But it's a tremendous amount, and a lot of it is just not getting into the medical schools in their early education.
Yeah.
And they have so much to learn, it just hasn't been the focus. And
do they even have proper tests? If you walked into a conventional doctor's office today and said, I want to get my magnesium tested, does the test even test the intracellular levels? Is it inaccurate?
Well, you could get a red blood cell magnesium, which is the inside the cell. There's also I beg your pardon?
Do they even know to do that?
Some doctors do. Not many. But the serum magnesium is an extracellular magnesium. And magnesium in the extracellular fluids of the body is only, oh my gosh, at the most 2% of the body's magnesium. So it is not, and it's been shown over and over that it is not a reliable marker for many, many cases of magnesium deficit. There is an intracellular measurement by, I think it's called EXA test. They're up in Oregon now. They used to be in Foster City. EXATEST. And they do intracellular magnesium, calcium, sodium, and potassium, and the ratios for those in phosphorus, I believe.
So what
they
use the
cells that are under your tongue. It's very easy to do. You send it in to them. And there are many chiropractics and naturopaths that use EXA test and can tell clinically what the results being. And so I know about that. There's also there are more and more tests coming along and refinements of what's there. But in the general clinical setting that most doctors and most clinical laboratories have access to, this knowledge is not at work at this time.
Can you talk just a little bit about, go back to the heart and talk about, somebody told me one time, a conventional doctor, that 90% of the women that walked around had mitral valve prolapse.
Well, I don't know if that figure is true, but I do have one person who had mitral valve prolapse that is related to a magnesium deficit. And I do have one case study I can tell about. I knew this person who as a child had rheumatic fever, and I would say probably in her 50s or 60s, found that she had developed a mitral valve prolapse, and I think they were going to operate on it. And I wrote to her and I said, well, why don't you try some magnesium? She said, well, what do I do? And I only started at 700 milligrams a day, a very high dose. And she went on for a couple of months, and all of a sudden she called me. She said, oh, my God, I've got diarrhea. And I said, that means that your body has absorbed enough magnesium, I believe. Back it off. Go on down to 300, 200, whatever amount you take where your GI tract is not going into that kind of a phase.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, her mitral valve prolapse was gone.
Really?
Yeah. Now, isn't that wonderful when that happens?
Yes, it is.
It's wonderful to hear these stories. I want to tell your listeners this. It's wonderful when you hear these stories and you think, that's it. If you have a magnesium deficit and you get magnesium to your body, it will respond. It should respond in many cases rapidly, not at all, but in most cases rapidly. But if it's not, if your symptoms are not caused by a nutritional magnesium deficit, you can take all the magnesium in the world, and it really isn't going to change that symptom.
That's good information to know. What about estrogen and magnesium? What is the relationship there? And everybody has too much estrogen nowadays, or estrogen dominance. Can magnesium help that in any way?
Well, do you remember when I talked about cholesterol and how cholesterol's pathway ends up, it turns into estrogen and testosterone and the other.
Mm-hmm.
There is a relationship between estrogen and magnesium and calcium balancing. And I would have to go, to do that correctly, I'd have to go back to my co-author's work and read it again, because she did a tremendous amount of work on this. And she predicted in the WHIM study that those women were going to have, they were giving them calcium, that they were going to have a upsurge in cardiovascular events, which in fact predicted, because she tried to tell them, if you're going to give them calcium, that's great, but you have to balance it with magnesium, or instead of just working with the bones, you're going to be getting into this area where you're going to affect the cardiovascular health of the body, because it's going to be too low in magnesium, mm-hmm. given the amount of calcium it has. And she was right. It happened. It happened after she passed away. But still, she was absolutely right about it. So she had some work. Her name is Mildred Seelig, S-E-E-L-I-G. And she's the woman I wrote this book with, Mildred Seelig and Andrea Rosanoff. It's called The Magnesium Factor. What this book does is not go into all of these things, but it touches on a lot of them as it tries to explain the magnesium link with all the heart disease risk factors. And since we wrote that book, and we published it in 2003, and it took the research up through 2002, there's been a lot of studies since then, and we showed how Syndrome X, or the beginnings of metabolic of type 2 diabetes, were coming into play. The low magnesium status in our populations, coupled with the high amounts of refined sugars, are really coming out now as type 2 diabetes in a lot of people. It's mm-hmm. not a straight, simple thing. There looks to me like there might be something else or a couple of other things that are also missing. But one of the things I did learn when I was in college about magnesium was that magnesium, when you have it, a deficit with it, it comes with a wide range of general malnutrition deficit. And I believe that's true. I believe that, and magnesium is very potent, and it's sort of like the mother lode in many ways in terms of cellular control and so on. So it's very important. But if you have a deficit in magnesium, it doesn't mean that you get the magnesium back up and then you're nutritionally sound. It isn't quite that simple, I don't believe. But everybody is different, and it's preventing any of these deficits is the absolute best way to go, because coming back from an actual deficient state can be a very long, arduous process, and you really need to have a good practitioner, I believe, to help you do that, because it's so difficult to know, is this too much, is this too little, balancing back and forth. One of the most troubling things about nutrients is that the toxicity symptoms for many essential nutrients are the same as the deficiency symptoms. And so it's extremely difficult to know, is this too much or am I too little? That's what I mean when I say we really need practitioners who really know the research and really know what they're doing and are combining the knowledge of the naturopaths and the alternative medicine people who are seeing patients all the time and seeing the wide range of individuality that's out there, plus the peer-reviewed evidence-based science, the clinical studies, to help build up the knowledge as background for these specialists and for these people who need to see patients on a daily basis coming in with this nutritional area that is just lacking because they're not getting enough of the micronutrients on a daily basis. On your own, yes.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
Well, one thing I find, and in the book, I go through with each risk factor in each chapter. There's one on hypertension. There's one on obesity and physical exercise. There's one on cholesterol and fats and so on. For each one, or if you have, say, a family history of heart disease, I go through and give as much as I can about how to prevent it, and if you have that risk factor, how to come back from the risk factor using magnesium in a healthy way. And hypertension also, because hypertension, for example, is not just magnesium. It's an interaction between magnesium and calcium and sodium and potassium. And what we often do is when we have a too high of a ratio of sodium to potassium, we can get hypertension. And what we do is lower the sodium. We try to lower the salt. Cut out the salt, the doctor says. Well, reality is you really need to up the potassium. The potassium is very, very low. I use a product called Light Salt. It's by Morton, and it's half sodium, half potassium chloride, just to try to keep enough potassium coming into my life.
I have a question here.
Huh?
I have a question. I need to ask a question.
Okay, let me finish one thing.
Okay.
The key, though, is even if you have a good potassium-to-sodium ratio, if you are low in magnesium, the body cannot utilize the potassium properly. And so you do get too high of a sodium for the amount of potassium your cell is able to absorb inside of itself, and hypertension is the result. So from these ions, and what I know, hypertension can be caused by several things, but it can be too low potassium for sodium and or too low of magnesium.
Okay. That's such a complicated combination there.
Well, it's a book, and I hope I lay it out for people who need to know that.
I play with all these things all the time because I'm sensitive and I can feel when there's something. So I started taking a potassium supplement when I started doing this magnesium. But when I do, I can't breathe.
Oh, dear.
But I get, you know, I get those like that, and I get this real tightness in my chest. But I still get fluid retention. So how do you know what the balance is?
Yes, exactly. I know.
Do you know?
Yeah, I know. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we knew? If we could just say, and I say again, it's experience. You need to look at what your diet has been recently, how much stress there's been in your life, because stress burns up your magnesium like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been in loud noises for a long time, if you've done very strenuous mental work, can burn your magnesium. Take a look at what you've been experiencing. Take a look at what you've been eating. Take a look at the supplements you've been taking. Take a look at your symptoms, and you say, okay, what makes sense here, given what I know? The ability to get a full breath, that's a magnesium, can be part of a magnesium deficit. It is not the only thing that can cause it, which is also a problem, you see. Because it's like if you're just in a high anxiety state, coming from the environment, you have an anxious situation, which many of us are experiencing right now, especially economically. This is our body responding to our environment. Now, if we have all of our nutrients, yes, it's going to do its best that it can, you know. But we may have to up our general level of micronutrients while we go through these stressful times. On the other hand, so coming in from the environment, yes, you can have that experience, and it is, in fact, a legitimate response to your environment. On the other hand, if you get low in your intake of these essential micronutrients, let's say magnesium, because that's the one I know about, without the environment being stressful, you have an internal stress now. It kicks off the same reaction because it's a deficit. It's no longer a response to the environment, your external environment. It's a response to your internal environment, which is a deficit. So that's why I say, it's especially with these kinds of things, it always helps to have a really good practitioner to help you discern, is this out there, or is it in here?
Yeah.
You hear what I'm saying?
We've got about 4 minutes.
Well, I want to congratulate you on listening to your body and upping your knowledge of these things. I think that's a good direction to go in.
I do it to help other people.
Ah.
I'm so passionate about turning people on to people like you and getting them away from pharmaceuticals, you know, so they can get well.
Yeah.
I watch my friend right now. He's he's dying because he's on like 40 pharmaceuticals and he has awful restless leg. And I'm like, Joel, take some potassium, fetch some magnesium. But I don't know which one, so I only know to find people like you. So thank you. This book is the best.
Well, thank you, Ava, for what you do. I am passionate also about people having good nutritional health. And the knowledge is out there, and it belongs to the people because, after all, pretty much they paid for it.
So tell us one more time where people can find you.
Well, there's the book, The Magnesium Factor. You can get that on Amazon. And the senior author is Mildred Seelig, S-E-E-L-I-G. And I do have a web page, although, everybody, it's a work in progress. It's not quite up to snuff, but it's called centerformaged.org, because where I am the director of research and science information outreach for the Center for Magnesium Education and Research. And I'm here in Pahoa, Hawaii, and I'm available by email, and I am available. You can contact me through the webpage. Once again, you can do it two ways. One word, centerformaged.org or maged.us. I think both those get you to my webpage. And if you want to get in touch with me, just do the contact and I'll get an email from you, okay?
If you can't find her, email me and I'll forward it to her.
All right.
It's an excellent book, Andriana. Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you for rescuing me. Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health. Integral Health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr.